Now a blue sign hurtles through space toward a green planet. Turner. Now in a black and white film, a shield appears inscribed with the letters WB. Warner Brothers Pictures Incorporated presents. In shadow, a man lights a cigarette for a woman. Smoke drifts into titles. Humphrey Bogart as Philip Marlowe and Lauren Bacall as Vivian Sternwood Rutledge in The Big Sleep. The woman lays her cigarette in an ashtray. Then the man places his beside hers. This film is described for blind and visually impaired audiences by Descriptive Video Service, WGBH Boston. Described by Samantha Manahan. Read by Peter Hayter. Funded by the U.S. Department of Education. Titles continue. A Howard Hawks production with John Ridgely, Martha Vickers, Louis-Jean Haidt, and others. Screenplay by William Faulkner, Lee Brackett, and Jules Furthman. From the novel by Raymond Chandler. Copyright 1946, Warner Brothers Pictures Incorporated. Music by Max Steiner. Directed by Howard Hawks. Now a man's shadow moves across an ornate door knocker bearing the name Sternwood. A silver-haired butler opens the door.
My name's Marlowe. General Sternwood wanted to see me.
Yes, Mr. Marlowe.
Will you come in, please, sir?
Marlowe takes off his fedora.
I'll tell the general that you're here.
Oh, thank you.
The butler strides off. As Marlowe looks around the elegant foyer, a girlish young woman comes downstairs. He eyes her slender figure, clad in a black shirt and polka-dotted shorts.
Morning.
She looks over his dark, slicked-back hair and lean frame, then smiles coyly.
You're not very tall, are you?
Well, I tried to be.
She steps close.
Not bad looking. Well, you probably know it.
Thank you.
What's your name?
Riley, Doghouse Riley.
That's a funny kind of name.
Think so?
What are you? Prize fighter?
No, I'm a shamus.
What's a shamus?
It's a private detective.
You're making fun of me.
Uh-huh.
She studies his grin, then swoons into his arms.
You're cute.
With a chuckle, he turns to the butler.
The general will see you now, sir.
Marlowe stands her up. His deep-set eyes narrow as he watches her sashay off.
Who's that? Miss Carmen Sternwood, sir.
You're a wiener. She's old enough.
Yes, sir.
The butler escorts Marlowe through a set of French doors into a conservatory filled with lush plants. Near a minibar, a frail old man sits in a wheelchair.
This is Mr. Marlowe, General.
How do you do, sir?
Sit down.
Thank you.
Brandy, Norris. How do you like your brandy, sir?
In a glass.
I used to like mine with champagne. Champagne cold as Valley Forge and with about 3 ponies of brandy under it. Oh, come, man. Pour a decent one. I like to see people drink. That'll do, Norris. You may take off your coat, sir.
Thank you.
Too hot in here for any man who has any blood in his veins. You may smoke, too. I can still enjoy the smell of it. Nice state of affairs when a man has to indulge his vices by proxy. You're looking, sir, at a very dull survival of a very gaudy life. Crippled, paralyzed in both legs. Very little I can eat, and my sleep is so near waking that it's hardly worth the name. I seem to exist largely on heat, like a newborn spider.
Yeah.
The orchids are an excuse for the heat. You like orchids?
Not particularly.
Nasty things. Their flesh is too much like the flesh of men. Their perfume has the rotten sweetness of corruption.
He watches Marlowe drink.
Tell me about yourself, Mr. Marlowe.
Well, there's much to tell. I'm 38. I went to college. I can still speak English when my business demands it. Used to work for the district attorney's office. It was Bernie Olds, the chief inspector, sent word you wanted to see me.
You didn't like working for the district attorney, eh?
I was fired for insubordination. I seem to rate pretty high on that.
Yeah. I always did myself. What do you know about my family, Mr. Marlowe?
Well, you're a widower. Millionaire. Have 2 young daughters. One unmarried and one married a couple of years ago to a man named Rutledge, but it didn't take. Both living with you and both...
Go on, sir.
Both pretty and both pretty wild. What do you want to see me about?
I'm being blackmailed again.
Again?
About a year ago, I paid a man named Joe Brody $5,000 to let my younger daughter alone.
Hmm.
What does that mean?
Means, Didn't go through the district attorney's office or I'd have heard about it. Who handled it for you?
Sean Regan.
Sean Regan? There must be some reason why he isn't handling it this time. What is it?
Sean has left me.
I thought I hadn't seen him around lately.
About a month ago, without a word. I had no claim on him. I was only his employer. But I had hoped that he'd come to regard me as something more than that, that at least he'd have said goodbye. That was what hurt. You knew him, too?
Yes. In the old days when he used to run rum out of Mexico and I was on the other side. We used to swap shots between drinks or drinks between shots, whichever you like.
My respects to you, sir. Few men ever swapped more than one shot with Sean Regan. He commanded a brigade in the Irish Republican Army, but and you knew that.
No, I didn't.
He holds up his empty glass.
Oh, but I knew he was a good man at whatever he did. No one was more pleased than I when I heard you taking him on here as your... whatever he was.
My friend. My son, almost. Many an hour he sat here with me, sweating like a pig, drinking the brandy I could no longer drink, and telling stories of the Irish Revolution.
Well, enough of that.
Marlowe wipes his neck and fluffs his sweat-dampened shirt, then reads a business card General Sternwood gives him.
Oh, that's a Gwynne Geiger rare books.
Read the other side.
Marlowe flips it over. Dear sir, in spite of the uncollectability of the enclosed, which frankly are gambling debts, I assume you might wish them honored. Respectfully, A.G. Geiger. Marlowe studies promissory notes, each for $1,000, signed by Carmen Sternwood.
These are signatures?
Yes.
Who's Arthur Gwynne Geiger?
I haven't the faintest idea.
Did you ask her?
No, and I don't intend to. If I did, she'd just suck her thumb and look coy.
Yeah, I met her in the hall, and she did that to me. And she tried to sit on my lap while I was standing up.
Well?
Marlowe swigs his brandy.
Your other daughter, Mrs. Rutledge, she mixed up in this?
No.
They're alike? They run around together?
They're alike only in having the same corrupt blood. Vivian is spoilt, exacting, smart, and ruthless. Carmen is still the little child who likes to pull the wings off flies. I assume they have all the usual vices besides those they've invented for themselves. If I seem a bit sinister as a parent, Mr. Marlowe, it's because my hold on life is too slight to include any Victorian hypocrisy. I need hardly add that any man who has lived as I have and who indulges for the first time in parenthood at my age deserves all he gets. Well?
Marlowe presses his lips together and paces, fingering his ear. Sweat stains his white dress shirt.
Pay him.
Why?
Well, she signed these notes, didn't she?
Yes.
Who's this Joe Brody you paid the $5,000 to?
I can't recall. My butler, Norris, would know. I think he called himself a gambler.
Geiger says these are gambling debts.
They may be.
Think they are?
No.
I guess you want me to take this Geiger off your back, is that right?
Yes.
Want to know anything or just get rid of him?
I just want to get rid of him.
Might cost you a little.
Sternwood shrugs.
All right, thanks for the drink, General.
I enjoyed your drink as much as you did, sir.
You'll hear from me.
Good luck.
Marlowe gets his jacket and strides out, his face glistening with sweat. He fans himself with an envelope holding Geiger's business card and the promissory notes. The butler meets him in the foyer.
Oh, Mr. Marlowe, Mrs. Rutledge would like to see you before you leave, sir. And about the money, the general has instructed me to give you a check for whatever you require.
Instructed you how?
Oh, I see, sir. I forget that you're a detective. By the way, he rang his bell, sir.
Oh. You write his checks?
I have that privilege.
Good for you. Well, I don't need any money now, but when I do, I get $25 a day in expenses.
Yes, sir.
How did Mrs. Rutledge know I was here?
She saw you through the window, sir, and I was obliged to tell her who you were.
I don't know as I like that.
Are you attempting to tell me my duties, sir?
No, just having fun, trying to guess what they are.
This way, sir.
Norris walks him to an open door.
Go right in, sir. You're expected.
Thanks.
In a spacious bedroom, a slim, striking woman pours a drink.
You wanted to see me?
She shoots him a brief, sidelong glance, then looks him up and down.
So you're a private detective? I didn't know they existed except in books, or else they were greasy little men snooping around hotel corridors. Ah, you're a mess, aren't you?
I'm not very tall, either. Next time I'll come on stilts, wear a white tie and carry a tennis racket.
I doubt if even that would help. Now, this business of Dad's, think you can handle it for him?
It shouldn't be too tough.
Really? I would have thought a case like that took a little effort.
Not too much.
What will your first step be?
The usual one.
I didn't know there was a usual one.
Oh, sure there is. It comes complete with diagrams on page 47 of how to be a detective in 10 easy lessons, correspondence school textbook, and your father offered me a drink.
You must have read another one on how to be a comedian.
Hear what I said about the drink?
I'm quite serious, Mr. Marlowe. My father's
trying
to help yourself.
She paces away, then turns.
Now, look, Mr. Marlowe. My father's not well, and I want this case handled with the least possible worry to him.
That's just the way I was going to handle it.
I see. No professional secrets.
No.
I thought you wanted a drink.
I changed my mind.
Then what?
Strolling over to a window, she pushes it open.
How did you like Dad?
I liked him.
He liked Sean. Sean Regan. I suppose you'll know who he is.
Uh-huh.
You don't have to play poker with me, Mr. Marlowe. Dad wants to find him, doesn't he?
Do you?
Of course I do. Wasn't right for him to go off like that. Broke Dad's heart, although he won't say much about it. Or did he?
Why don't you ask him?
You know, I don't see what there is to be cagey about, Mr. Marlowe. And I don't like your manners.
Well, I'm not crazy about yours. I didn't ask to see you. I don't mind if you don't like my manners. I don't like them myself. They're pretty bad. I grieve over them long winter evenings. And I don't mind your ritzing me or drinking your lunch out of a bottle. But don't waste your time trying to cross-examine me.
People don't talk to me like that.
Oh.
Do you always think you can handle people like trained seals?
Uh-huh. I usually get away with it, too.
How nice for you.
What is it you're afraid of?
Her wide-set eyes flicker.
Dad didn't want to see you about Sean at all, did he?
Didn't he?
Could you find him if Dad wanted you to?
Maybe. When did he go?
About a month back. Just drove off one afternoon without saying a word. They found his car parked in some private garage.
They? Who's they?
Dad didn't tell you then.
Oh, yes, he told me about Regan, but that's not what he wants to see me about. That's what you've been trying to get me to say, isn't it?
I'm sure I don't care what you say, Mr. Marlowe.
I'm wasting your time. Goodbye, Mrs. Rutledge.
Taking his suit coat and fedora, he heads back into the foyer and finds the butler.
Oh, Norris, you made a mistake. Mrs. Rutledge didn't want to see me.
I'm sorry, sir. I make many mistakes.
The butler leads Marlowe to the front door. Later, at the Hollywood Public Library, Marlowe opens a book, Famous First Editions, to the chapter Collector's Items. He jots down two titles, Chevalier Audubon and Ben-Hur. Marlowe pockets the note inside his suit jacket, then returns the book to the circulation desk. A blonde-haired librarian smiles at him.
Did you find what you wanted?
Yes, thanks.
You know, you don't look like a man who'd be interested in first editions.
Well, I collect blondes and bottles, too.
Later, he strolls to the store A.G. Geiger, Rare Books and Deluxe Editions. Chuckling to himself, he puts on a pair of square sunglasses, flips up the brim of his fedora, and heads in with a hasty gait. A woman wearing a black dress greets him.
Can I be of any assistance?
Yes. Would you happen to have a Ben-Hur 1860?
A what?
I said, would you happen to have a Ben-Hur 1860?
Oh, a first edition.
No. The third. The one with the erratum on page 116.
I'm afraid not.
How about a Chevalier Audubon 1840, full set, of course?
Not at the moment.
You do sell books.
What do those look like, grapefruit?
Well, from here they look like books. Maybe I better see Mr. Geiger.
He's not in just now.
Well, that's a pity because I...
A mustached man enters and stiffens. The woman wags her hand toward a back room, then buzzes him in.
I said Mr. Geiger is not in.
I heard you. You needn't yell at me. Well, I'm already late for my lecture on Argentine ceramics, so I guess I won't wait.
The word is ceramics. And they ain't Argentine. They're Egyptian.
You did sell a book once, didn't you? Well, I guess I'll run along to the public library, or I could go to that bookstore across the street, couldn't I?
Mm-hmm.
Do so.
Thank you.
He steps outside, turns down his fedora brim, and takes off his sunglasses. Marlowe glances up at the sky, then strides across the street to the Acme bookshop. Inside, he walks over to a slender woman wearing glasses, with her long hair pulled back in a barrette.
Something I can do for you?
Would you do me a very small favor?
I don't know. It depends on the favor.
You know Geiger's bookstore across the street?
I think I may have passed it.
You know Geiger by sight?
Well, I...
What does he look like?
Wouldn't it be easy enough to go across the street and ask to see him?
I've already done that.
Oh.
You know anything about rare books?
You could try me.
Would you happen to have a Ben-Hur 1863rd edition with a duplicated line on page 116?
Parting her lips, she studies him head to toe, then looks something up. Marlowe leans against a shelf, a hand on his hip.
Or a Chevalier Audubon, 1840.
She steps slowly back to him, her keen eyes fixed on his.
Nobody would. There isn't one.
The girl in Geiger's bookstore didn't know that.
Oh, I see. You begin to interest me, vaguely.
Yeah. I'm a private dick on a case. Perhaps I'm asking too much. Although it doesn't seem too much to me, somehow.
Well, Geiger's in his early 40s. Medium height. Fattish.
Marlowe sucks in his stomach.
Soft all over. Charlie Chan mustache. Well-dressed. Wears a black hat. Affects a knowledge of antiques and hasn't any. Oh, yes, I think his left eye is glass.
You'd make a good cop.
Thanks.
He looks out the window.
Going to wait for him to come out?
Yeah.
It'll close for another hour or so. It's raining pretty hard.
I got my car.
He catches her coy gaze and flashes a grin.
Yeah, that's right, it is, isn't it? You know, it just happened. I got a bottle of pretty good rye in my pocket. I'd a lot rather get wet in here.
Well.
She closes the front door and locks it. Dipping her knees as she pulls down a shade, she eyes Marlowe coquettishly.
Looks like we're closed for the rest of the afternoon.
She takes two cups out of a desk drawer, and Marlowe opens his flask.
Tell me more about this business.
Oh, there isn't much to tell.
What's the matter?
Just wondering if you have to,
Oh, not necessarily.
She takes off her glasses. While Marlowe pours two drinks, she lets down her hair and wets her lips.
Little things like that make it up. Hello.
Hello.
They toast, then take a drink. Later. A steady rain falls as the slender woman peers out the window.
I hate to tell you, but that's Geiger's car driving up.
A black sedan.
Who's the man getting out?
Geiger's shadow. His name's Carol Lundgren.
Well, thanks.
If you ever want to buy a book.
Ben-Hur 1860?
It's duplications. So long.
So long, pal.
He pats her shoulder, then heads out. Across the street, the mustached man steps out of Geiger's bookshop. Carol Lundgren, a lanky man with slicked back hair, holds an umbrella for him and walks him to the black sedan. The mustached man climbs behind the wheel. Marlowe watches, then gets into his two-door coupe. Later, headlights illuminate a street sign, Laverne Terrace. The mustached man steers the sedan up a hill, then turns into a driveway. Lettering on the mailbox reads, A.G. Geiger. The mustached man gets out and jogs to the house, tilting his fedora against the driving rain. He reaches in his pocket for keys, then unlocks the front door and goes inside. Marlowe pulls up in his coupe. Parking on the street, he watches Geiger's house. Through a curtained window, he sees a man take off his hat. Headlights glow on Marlowe's rear window and he ducks down. The car, a dark-colored Packard with round headlights and a chrome grille, passes by and pulls into Geiger's driveway. A slender woman climbs out and hurries to the front door. In his own coupe, Marlowe sits up and watches. A man opens the door for the woman and she heads in. Marlowe puts on his trench coat and gets out into the rain. Water beads on his fedora as he crosses the street to the woman's Packard and opens up the driver's side door. He shines a flashlight on the steering column and reads the registrant's name, Carmen Sternwood. Closing the door, Marlowe heads back to his car. Later, Marlowe slouches in the driver's seat, smoking a cigarette. With his fedora pulled down low, he takes a long drag, then tosses the butt out the window and looks over at Geiger's house. A bright light flashes. Marlowe hops out of his car. He dashes to the front door. It's locked. Around back, a man in patent leather shoes bolts down a set of stairs, then climbs into a black car. As he drives off, Marlowe runs toward the street. Another car, a wood-paneled station wagon, follows the first. Marlowe turns back to the house and kicks open a window. His eyes dart around a dim living room as he climbs inside. In a doorway, a beaded curtain swings. Marlowe looks across the room and sees Carmen. Sitting in a chair with her hair in her face, she dopily fingers her knee. Marlowe takes a few steps toward her and pauses, his eyes fixed on the floor. A man lies still. Marlowe rolls him over. He wears a sharp suit with a bow tie and black-rimmed spectacles. Marlowe checks his pulse, then looks over at Carmen. Tugging thoughtfully on his ear, he steps close. Carmen stares at her lap, drowsily tracing her finger over the design on her skirt. Marlowe notices a stemmed glass beside her and sniffs it. His brow furrows. Narrowing his gaze, he sets down the glass and picks up a handheld flash bulb from a nearby table. An ancient bust of Buddha sits beside it, facing Carmen. Marlowe glimpses a crack in the statue's thick, sculpted hair. He pulls on it, and the back of the head opens, revealing a hidden camera. Crouching to peer through the statue, Marlowe checks out the camera's view, which points in Carmen's direction. He clenches his teeth and double-checks the angle. With a tight-set jaw, Marlowe paces back to Carmen, who giggles to herself. Firmly grabbing her chin, he slaps her.
You're cute.
You're higher than a kite. Come on, wake up.
I know. Doghouse, Riley. You're cute.
What do you know about this?
What?
Mr. Geiger, here on the floor.
He's cute, too.
He shakes her.
Look, you've got a dead man lying right at your feet. How did it happen?
You talk a lot, Riley. Yuck.
Come on.
He pulls her to her feet, walks her across the room, and pushes her down on the sofa.
Lie down there and be quiet.
All right.
She closes her eyes. Marlowe steps over to the statue. He removes the hidden camera and opens it. There's no film. Clenching his teeth, he snaps his fingers in urgent thought and glances around. He sets down the camera, then gets a decanter and two glasses from where Carmen was sitting. Later, searching Geiger's desk, Marlowe opens up a box. Inside, he finds a few letters and a small notebook. Under the headings Salter and Sternwood, scrambled letters and numbers form cryptic messages. Gazing down at the cipher, Marlowe tugs on his ear. Setting the notebook aside, he returns the letters to the box, then locks it and puts it in the desk drawer. He pockets the keys. Crossing the room, Marlowe turns off the gas fireplace, then shuts the window he came in through. Carmen still sleeps on the sofa. Tucking the notebook in the waist of his pants, he glances down at Geiger on the floor. Marlowe picks up Carmen's coat.
Come on, we're going.
Carmen totters in a stupor as he wraps her coat around her shoulders. With a rough grip, Marlowe pulls her to her feet and they head out. Later, at the Sternwoods, the butler answers the door.
Good evening, sir. Good evening, Norris. Lexi Dental Sternwood.
He's asleep, sir. Well, what about Mrs. Rutledge? Is she...
Yes. Oh, good evening, Mrs. Rutledge.
Hello.
I've got your sister outside. She's all right, but she's not walking very well. I'll need some help.
He heads back outside, and Vivian follows. Later, Marlowe carries Carmen into the bedroom, and Vivian brings in her sister's things. Wearing a flowing satin negligee, Vivian turns down the bed, and Marlowe drops Carmen on it. Vivian sits at her sister's side.
Are you sure that she's going to...
Oh, yeah, she'll be all right in the morning.
Vivian brushes her sister's hair off her sleeping face.
Did you do this?
That? Oh, yes, that's a little special service I always provide all my clients.
Including being insolent. Where did you find her?
I didn't find her.
Well, then how did
I haven't
you...
been here. You haven't seen me, and she hasn't been out of this house all evening.
That bad?
Mm-hmm.
Just what did happen, Mr. Marlowe?
You're pretty fond of your sister, aren't you?
Yes, I am.
Do anything for her, wouldn't you?
Anything.
Then drop this whole thing.
But I still think I should know what...
Don't even ask her.
She never remembers anyway.
Just what did she forget about Sean Regan?
Vivian glares at him, then drops her gaze.
What did she tell you?
Not half as much as you just did. Take it easy. I don't slap so good around this time of the evening.
Marlowe holds her arms.
You go too far, Marlowe.
Well, those are harsh words to throw at a man, especially when he's walking out of your bedroom. Good night, Mrs. Rutledge.
The butler helps him with his coat.
Oh, thanks, Norris. I've put her car away, sir. Oh, that's fine. If anybody asks, she's been in all evening and forget about my being here.
I understand, sir. May I call a cab for you, sir?
It'd be better if you didn't. I'll be all right.
Good night, sir.
Good night.
Later, Marlowe walks through the pouring rain to his car parked outside of Geiger's house. He hesitates at the driver's side door, then crosses the street toward Geiger's. Raindrops glisten on his trench coat and fedora as he digs in his pocket for keys. He unlocks the front door and steps into the dark house. Reaching behind an embroidered tapestry, he turns on the lights, then closes the door. His dark, beady eyes search the room. Marlowe moves toward the sofa and statue, then looks at the floor. Geiger's body is gone. Kneeling, Marlowe feels the blood-stained rug. His eyes flicker and he rises. With a steady, cautious gait, he strides through the beaded curtain into a room with an adjoining bathroom. He opens a door and peers into another room. Closing it, he stops in a shadowy doorway and turns on the light. His lips settle in a tight frown. Passing back through the beaded curtain, Marlowe strides to the front door and flicks off the light. He heads out into the rain. Later, at his apartment. On the door, below the number 206, a small sign reads, Philip Marlowe, Private Investigator. Marlowe unlocks the door and heads in. Later, at his desk, he reads a booklet and jots something down, then drops his pencil and crumples his note. Pinching his brow, Marlowe hides Geiger's notebook in the desk, then opens the door. A round-faced man waits with his hands in his overcoat pockets.
Oh, hello, Bernie. Come on in.
Hello, Phil.
Don't you ever go to bed?
What you been doing?
Just sitting around.
All evening?
Yeah. What is it?
Does it have to be something?
Well, you're a friend of mine, but when a man from the homicide squad just drops in at 2 o'clock in the morning, I kind of...
Working on a cipher, huh?
Just fooling around.
You're also working for the Sternwoods, aren't you?
Yeah, thanks to you.
Done anything for them yet?
I just started this afternoon, and the rain came.
All right. They seem to be a family the things happen to. There's a big Packard belonging to one of them washing around in the surf off Lido Pier.
Hmm.
And I almost forgot there's a guy in it.
Couldn't be Regan, could it?
Who?
Sean Regan.
You mean that Irish ex-legger old Sternwood hired to do his drinking for him?
Yeah.
What would he be doing down there?
What would anybody be doing down there?
That's what I'm going to Lido to find out. Want to come along?
Yeah, I do.
How's the weather?
Clearing up.
What time did that call come in?
About 15 minutes ago.
Kind of a car did you say that was?
Packard.
Later, at Lido Pier, a crane hauls up the shiny black Packard. Outside a bait shop, the coroner leans over a blanket-covered body. Marlowe and Bernie stroll onto the scene, and a cop greets them.
Hello, Bernie.
Hi, Ed. I see you got him off. Who is he?
His name's Owen Taylor. General Stern was chauffeur, according to his driver's license.
What's the story?
You can see most of it from here. That's where he went through the rail. He must have hit it pretty hard. The rain stopped down here about 9 p.m. The broken ends of the rails are dry inside. That would put in about 9:30.
Marlowe watches the dripping Packard lower onto the pier. He and Bernie step over to the body.
All right, Doc, let's have it.
His neck was broken and something hit him hard across the left temple.
What made the bruise? Steering wheel?
Mm-hmm. Whatever it was covered. Because the wound had already bled under the skin while he was still alive.
Blackjack?
Could be.
Hey, Bernie, funny thing, the hand throttle on the car is set halfway down.
Thanks, Jim. So long, Doc.
All right, boys, take him away.
Yes.
Marlowe and Bernie stroll away.
Could be drunk or a suicide.
Yeah, but it is. You know anything about this, Owen Taylor?
Only the two or three of the Sternwood chauffeurs lost their jobs on account of the younger daughter, Carmen.
Hmm.
You better tell me what you're working on, Phil.
They told me blackmail.
Who are they after, Carmen?
Yeah.
This doesn't look like the way you'd handle it.
You know, I got a feeling that... me? I didn't do this.
What are you going to say, Phil?
Give me another day, Barney. I may have something for you.
Okay. Let's go home.
Later, Marlowe arrives at his office waiting. Vivian Rutledge sits there, wearing a black beret and a checkered skirt suit.
Good morning.
So you do get up. I was beginning to think perhaps you worked in bed like Marcel Proust.
Who's he?
You wouldn't know him. French writer.
Come into my boudoir.
He unlocks a door with lettering on a frosted glass window. Private. They head into his simple office.
You don't put on much of a front, do you?
Well, there isn't much money in this business, if you're honest.
Are you honest?
Are we going to start that again?
I'm sorry. Also about yesterday. Perhaps I was rude.
Well, we were both rude. You want to see me about Taylor?
So you know about that. Poor Owen.
Yeah, the DA's man took me down to Lido last night. Turned out he knew more about him than I did. For instance, he knew that Owen Taylor wanted to marry your sister once.
Perhaps it wouldn't have been such a bad idea. You see, he was in love with her. But I didn't come here about Owen. Do you still feel you can't tell me what my father wants you to do?
Well, without his permission.
You can't even tell me if it was about Carmen?
Nope.
She holds an envelope.
Oh, you better look at this. Messenger brought it this morning.
8:35.
That's right.
She takes a nice picture.
They want $5,000 for the negative and the rest of the prints.
The demand came how?
A woman telephoned me shortly after this thing was delivered.
What else was there?
Does there have to be something else?
Well, this thing isn't worth $5,000 to anybody.
Well, they think it is.
Why?
The woman said if they didn't get the money today, I'd be talking to my sister through a wire screen. She said there was a police jam connected with it.
What kind of a jam?
I don't know.
You know where this picture was taken?
I haven't the slightest idea.
Or when?
No.
You talked to Carmen about it?
She was asleep when I left.
Figure out a story?
Norris fixed that.
How?
She was in all evening. Police already checked that when they called about Owen.
Go ahead and scratch.
She stops rubbing her leg and scratches.
What was Owen doing with your car last night?
Nobody knows. He took it without permission. Why do you think that...
That he knew about this picture? I don't rule him out. And outside of what the woman said, you don't know any reason why they want $5,000 for it.
She fingers her glove.
That's why I came to you.
If
There's usually five fingers on any glove. Why didn't you go to the police?
Because I thought that
you were afraid they might turn up something that I couldn't sit on. Then where would the stern would be? Isn't that right?
May I use your phone, Mr. Marlowe?
He moves it close to her.
Hello? Police headquarters, please. Hello, this is Mrs.
Marlowe takes the receiver.
Hello, what do you want, please? What? I called you. Say, who is this? Sergeant Riley. Well, there isn't any Sergeant Riley here. Oh, wait a minute. You better talk to my mother.
Arching his brow, he hands the phone to Vivian.
Hello, who's this? The police? Well, this isn't a police station. Well, if you know it, then why did you... Look, this is not a police station. What was that you said? Oh, my father should hear this.
Marlowe grins.
Hello, who is this? Yeah, but she just told you that... Oh, you're the police. Oh, he's the police. Oh, well, that's different. What can I do for you? I can do what? Where? Oh, no, I wouldn't like that. Neither would my daughter. I hope the sergeant never traces that call.
You like to play games, don't you?
Mm-hmm.
Why did you stop me phoning?
Because I'm working for your father.
Oh.
Or because I think I'm beginning to like another one of the Sternwoods.
I prefer the second reason.
Well, let's get back to business. Have you got $5,000 in cash?
No.
Can you get it?
I think so.
Where from, your father?
I'd rather not.
Where would you get it?
Well, from Eddie Mars.
The gambler? Oh, well, that explains why you haven't got $5,000 in cash.
I like gambling.
Well, so do I. How do you know he'll give it to you?
Oh, I can get the money. I've been a good customer of Eddie Mars. Another reason. There's a bond between Mr. Mars and the Sternwoods. You see, Sean Regan ran off with Eddie's wife. That doesn't interest you?
Might make it easier for me to find him. That is, if I were looking for him. Is Regan mixed up in this?
No. No, Sean's not in any cheap blackmailing scheme.
I'm glad you said that. You want to tell me now?
Tell you what?
What it is you're trying to find out. Well, it's a funny thing. You're trying to find out what your father hired me to find out, and I'm trying to find out why you want to find out.
You could go on forever, couldn't you? Anyway, it'll give us something to talk about next time we meet.
Among other things. Oh, Mrs. Rutledge.
The picture.
You wanted me to do something about this, didn't you?
Mm-hmm.
That woman who called, how'd you leave it?
She's to call me back at 6 this evening with instructions.
Why don't you phone me as soon as you've heard from her?
All right.
Oh, and Mrs. Rutledge, as long as you're going to pay $5,000 for the rest of these, you better take this one with you.
Goodbye, Mr. Marlowe.
She takes the picture and tries the door. It's locked.
Well, it wasn't intentional.
Try it sometime.
Daytime. Marlowe strides into Geiger's bookshop.
Well, I'm back again. Remember me?
I'm afraid I...
He puts on sunglasses and flips up his fedora brim.
Remember me now,
Now, see here, what's the big
Easy,
idea?
Sister. That was only a stall about those first editions.
What
I got
you...
something to sell, something Geiger's wanted for a long time. Is Geiger in?
No, he isn't. You might come back tomorrow.
Drop the veil, sister. I'm in the business myself. I haven't got all day. Is he sick? I could go to his house.
No, that wouldn't do. Perhaps if you'd come back tomorrow, I...
Say, I can...
Geiger's henchman.
Come on, Carol.
Carol closes the door to the back room.
Hurry up, will you?
Perhaps you could come
His
back...
His name's Lundgren, isn't it?
Just what
Who's
do you want?
The other guy?
You'd better come around tomorrow.
In the morning, early?
Yes, early.
Because it looks like you're moving today.
Marlowe strides out. He climbs into the back of a cab. A pretty woman sits behind the wheel.
All right, driver, let's go.
Okay.
She pulls away, and Marlowe leans toward the dividing window.
Around the corner, then. Take it easy.
Where are we going?
Follow a car. Tail job.
I'm your girl, bud.
Wouldn't be bad. Now, that station wagon coming out of the alley, that's the one.
She nods and follows the wood-paneled station wagon. Crates hang out the back. Later, the station wagon pulls up to the garage of an apartment complex. The taxi stops out front, and Marlowe hops out. Striding to the entryway, he studies the names on the mailboxes. His eyes settle on one, Joe Brody. Apartment 405. Marlowe glances around, then glimpses a plaque for the building, Randall Arms. Later, the taxi stops in front of a second-hand furniture store. Marlowe gets out and digs in his pocket for cash.
Here you are, sugar. Buy yourself a cigar.
If you can use me again sometime, call this number.
Day and night?
Night's better. I work during the day.
Later, Marlowe parks his coupe outside Geiger's house. Wearing a crisp suit and a snap-brim fedora, he crosses the street. Something catches his eye, and he walks across the front lawn to the driveway, where a black sedan is parked near a hedge. Staring down, he hooks his thumbs on his belt. Carmen comes out of hiding from behind the hedge. She wears a kerchief draped over her hair.
What are you...
Remember me? I'm Doghouse Riley. Man that didn't grow very tall. What's the matter? Couldn't you get in the house? Come on, I've got a key. Where'd you leave your car?
Around in the back.
Holding her arm, Marlowe takes a key out of his suit coat pocket and opens the front door. Carmen steps hesitantly inside, her eyes fixed on the floor. Her gaze shoots over to Marlowe, then back to the floor. Her hands fidget as she scans the dim room.
You looking for something?
How
much do you remember about last night?
Remember what? I was sick last night. I was home.
I mean before you went home, in that chair there. You remember, all right. Quit your stalling and stop biting your thumb.
Were you the one who was here last night?
How much do you remember?
Well, are you the police?
No, I'm a friend of your father's. Who killed Geiger?
Who else knows about it?
Well, that he's dead? I don't know. Certainly not the cops, or they'd be camping here. Was it Joe Brody?
Joe Brody? Who's he?
Now, look, sister, I don't know how much trouble you're used to, but I hope you've had plenty of practice dodging it. Did Brody kill him?
Kill who?
He mouths a cigarette.
Yes. Yes, Joe did it.
He did.
Marlowe grins.
Why?
I don't know.
But you're ready to tell the police he did it, huh? That is, if we can get the photograph he's got.
You mean...
Oh, yes, it's gone. I looked for it last night. Brody took it with him.
I've got to go home now.
All right, but I wouldn't say anything to the police about Brody just yet. Matter of fact, I wouldn't say anything about anything. That you were ever here last night or today, not even to your sister. Just leave it to Riley.
Your name isn't Riley.
They look at the front door. Marlowe takes a step toward the door. It opens, and a lanky man steps in, fingering a key.
Excuse the casual entrance. The bell didn't answer. Mr. Geiger around?
No, we don't know just where he is. We found the door open and we just stepped in.
Friends of his?
Business. We dropped in for a book, but we missed him.
Any message if he comes back?
No, I don't think so. We won't bother you.
Just a minute. The girl can go. I'd like to talk to you first.
Well, they don't want to talk to you.
I've got two boys outside in the car.
Oh? Well, it's like that, eh? Mm-hmm. Run along, Angel.
Carmen walks out, her gaze fixed on the lanky man. A scar slants under his right eye.
Your story didn't sound quite right.
Oh, that's too bad. You got a better one?
Maybe I can find one.
Kneeling suddenly, he studies the dark stain on the rug that seeped through to the floor.
Blood. Quite a lot of blood.
The man shows a gun.
You mind?
No, I'm used to it.
I think we'll let the police in on this. We'll have some law.
Yeah, why not?
Who are you, soldier?
Marlowe's my name. I'm a private detective.
Who's the girl?
A client of mine. Geiger tried to throw a loop on us, so we came up here to talk things over.
Convenient, the door being open when you didn't have a key. Huh?
Yeah, wasn't it? By the way, how'd you happen to have one?
Is that any of your business?
I could make it my business.
I could make your business mine.
Oh, you wouldn't like it. The pay's too small.
All right. I own this house. Geiger's my tenant. Now, what do you think of it?
Well, you know some nice people.
I take them as they come. Got any good ideas, soldier?
One or two. Somebody gunned Geiger, or somebody got gunned by Geiger who ran away. Or he had meat for dinner and likes to do his butchering in the parlor. No, I don't like it either. Maybe you better call your friends downtown.
I don't get it. I don't get your game here.
Don't you, Mr. Mars?
Wondered why you didn't ask me who I was. You seem to be telling me Geiger was in a racket of some kind. What racket?
I wouldn't know. I'm not his landlord, but I'll tell you something you missed. Somebody cleaned out the back of Geiger's store today.
You know, you talk too much. You really got those boys outside? Open the door.
Open it yourself. I already got a client.
As Marlowe puffs his smoke, Eddie Mars opens the door for two henchmen.
It's all right, boys. I'm just proving something. While you're here, look him over.
A skinny guy waits while his stocky partner pats Marlowe down and finds his wallet.
Pardon me.
Who is he?
Philip Marlowe. Over at Arms, Franklin Street. Special license, deputy badge and all.
All right, outside.
Shameless.
The man said outside.
He said that. That's what the man said. He said that.
The stocky one smiles on his way out.
He kills me.
Is he any good?
Who, Sidney? He's company for Pete. All right, Marlowe, talk.
Not to you. I told you I already got a client.
Who was it cleaned out the back of Geiger's store?
It's lots of weather we're having. Is the rain over at Las Salinas?
I might even make it worth your while to talk to you.
I might even make it worth yours. What do you care who cleaned out the back of Geiger's store?
I could make you talk.
It's been tried. And?
Marlowe shakes his head.
Why don't you call the cops like you said you would?
I think you better get out of here.
Oh, by the way, how's Mrs. Mars these days?
You take chances, Marlowe.
I get paid to.
He strides out, clenching his half-smoked cigarette. Later, in his office, Marlowe paces and snaps his fingers, one hand sunk in his pants pocket. He checks his watch, then looks out the window.
Yeah?
Marlowe?
Oh, hello, Mrs. Rutledge. I've been waiting to hear from you.
I'm sorry, I have nothing to tell you.
Oh. She didn't call, eh?
No, she didn't.
Yeah, well, did you get the money in case she does?
Yes, I have the money, and I'll get in touch with you just as soon as she calls.
Uh-huh. All right, I'll stay right here until you call.
He hangs up. Tugging on his ear, he furrows his brow and paces again. His brooding eyes lock on the phone. Then he grabs his hat. On his way out, he turns off the light. Now a street lamp illuminates a sign, Randall Place. Outside the apartment complex, Randall Arms, Marlowe pulls up in his coupe. Putting a cigarette between his lips, he waits. Later, he checks his watch. Headlights beam on his lean, chiseled features, and he glances across the street. A shiny, light-colored Packard pulls up, and Vivian Rutledge gets out. Marlowe watches her head inside, her long overcoat flowing around her slender frame. Later, Marlowe's heavy-lidded eyes study the entryway. He gets out and strides over. Inside, a staircase banister casts a slanted shadow on the wall. Marlowe walks through on his way upstairs. Strolling down a hallway, he stops outside apartment 405. A blonde-haired man smoking a cigarette opens the door.
Geiger? You said what?
Geiger, Arthur Gwynn Geiger, the fellow with the blackmail racket.
I don't know anybody by that name.
You're Joe Brody.
So what?
Well, so you're Joe Brody and you don't know anybody named Geiger. That's very funny.
So you've got a funny sense of humor, maybe. Take it away and play on it somewhere else.
Joe, you got Geiger's stuff. I got his sucker list. Don't you think we ought to talk things over? Now.
All right, if you think you got something.
Marlowe strides in past him, and Brody draws a pistol.
You alone, Joe?
Yeah, except for this.
Except... My. Such a lot of guns around town. It's a few brains. You know, you're the second guy I've met today that seems like a gat in the hand means the world with a tail. Put it down, Joe. The other guy's name was Eddie Marsh. You ever hear of him?
Nope.
If he ever gets wise to where you were last night in the rain, he'll hear of him.
What would I be to Eddie Marsh?
I don't know if you don't.
Look, don't get me wrong. I'm not a tough guy. Just careful.
Yeah, but you're not careful enough, Joe. That play with Geiger stuff was terrible. I saw that, you know.
Don't kid yourself. I won't use this if I have to. What's your story?
Why don't you ask your friend with the pointed toes to come out of there? She must get awful tired of holding her breath.
Come on out, Agnes.
Hello, sugar.
I
knew you were trouble. I told Joe to watch.
I asked Mrs. Rutledge to come out, too.
Vivian enters from the other room.
What did you come up here for?
Why'd you lie to me on the telephone?
I don't need you, Marlowe.
Just
I don't keep out
this?
Of this. I don't know how you got here, but I don't want you. Will you get out?
But the man with the gun won't let me. Look at him. He's all curious and bothered and wondering about
stuff. I bet I'm wondering about stuff, and I'm going to find out about it. All right, sit down.
Stop waving that gun around. I didn't have anything to do with
him
coming up here. Can't you talk without pointing that gun?
Don't argue with a man. Do as he says. Sit
down.
No,
you're ruining
it. I'm not ruining anything. If you just keep...
Say, look. What are you up here for?
To keep her from paying you off and to take the cops off your neck. Now, I'm not going to ruin it. The cops that want to find out where all that lead in Geiger's body came from. Look, Joe, you shot Geiger.
I didn't know that.
The cops don't yet. The trouble is he wasn't alone when you shot him. Either you didn't notice that, and I think you did, or you got scared and ran away. But you had nerve enough to take the film out of the camera. You had nerve enough to come back later and hide the body.
You're crazy, Joe.
Shut up. So that you could clean out Geiger's store before the law knew there was a murder to investigate.
You take chances, mister. It's lucky for you I didn't shoot Geiger.
Yeah, but you can step off for it just the same, Joe. You're made to order for the rap.
You think you've got me framed?
Positive.
How come?
Because somebody will tell it that way. I told you there was a witness. Now, don't go simple on me, Joe.
You mean Corman. She would. She'd say anything.
So you have got that picture.
I guess you think I'm dumb.
Just average for a grafter. You see, Joe, either you were there last night or you got the picture from somebody who was there. You knew Corman was there because you had your girlfriend here threatened Mrs. Rutledge with the police. Now, the only way you could have known enough to do that was by being there and seeing what happened. Or having the picture and knowing when and where it was taken. That makes sense, doesn't it?
Who are you and what do you get out of this?
Just a guy who's paid to do other people's laundry. All I'll get out of it is that picture.
How about a little dough? I'm down to nickels.
Not from my client.
What?
Get the picture, Joe.
Joe steps away.
Stay right there.
Keeping his gun aimed at Marlowe, he gets another pistol out of a desk and gives it to Agnes.
Here. Watch him.
Brody hides his own gun in his suit coat pocket and holds it at the ready as he opens the door. Raising his hands, he backs away. Carmen holds him at gunpoint.
Take it easy,
I
Carmen.
I want my picture, Joe.
Marlowe grabs Agnes's gun.
You shot Geiger, Joe.
Brody swats Carmen's gun away and shoves her down.
Get up, Angel. You look like a Pekingese. And now, since I'm collecting guns...
He takes Brody's.
Down, sugar. Now let's see, where were we? Oh, yes, you were just about to get something.
Brody lowers his hands and glares at Carmen, then takes an envelope out from under the desk blotter. He hands it to Marlowe, who takes out a roll of film.
There better not be any more prints.
There won't be.
Biting her lip, Carmen approaches Marlowe with a childish gaze.
Can I have my picture now?
No.
Can I have my gun back?
Later.
He slaps her thumb away from her mouth.
You're cute. I like you.
Now, what you see is nothing. I got a Balinese dancing girl tattooed across my chest. You better take her home.
He gives Vivian her coat.
I suppose I should thank you.
No, just don't lie to me next time.
Come on, Carmen.
Carmen slaps Brody with her purse.
Hold it, Joe.
Brody's tense jaw slackens, and he wipes his brow with a handkerchief.
You got off easy, Joe.
Hmm.
What's the matter, sugar?
He gives me a pain in my...
That goes for me, too. Well, you got your pictures. Get out.
Where'd he give you a pain?
Right in
Look,
my...
get out.
Not yet. We got a few things to straighten out.
I told you to get out.
Go on, Joe. What difference does it make now?
Why'd you put the B on Mrs. Rutledge?
Well, I tapped the old man 6 or 7 months ago. I figured it might not work twice.
What made you think Mrs. Rutledge wouldn't tell him about it?
How well do you know her?
We'll pass that.
Well, she gets around. I figured she might have a thing or two she wouldn't want the old man to know.
That's a little weak, but we'll pass that, too. Say, Joe, how'd you get that picture?
Look, you got what you came for, and you got it cheap. I don't know anything about a picture. Do I, Agnes?
Yeah, but, Joe, you just gave me the picture.
Oh, a half-smart guy. That's what I always draw. Never once a man who's smart all the way around the course. Never once.
Did I hurt you much, sugar?
You and every other man I've ever met.
Say, Joe, where'd you get that picture?
It fell out of somebody's pocket.
You got an alibi for last night?
I was right here. With Agnes.
Huh.
That's a great witness. Okay, Joe, you can only die once, even for a couple of murders.
Wait a minute. What do you mean, a couple of murders?
I mean two murders. Where were you about 7:30 last
night?
Where were you?
All right, I was watching Geiger's place.
Why?
Get something on it.
Try looking at me while you're talking.
Well, it was raining hard, and I was sitting in my car. There was a car parked out front, and another partway down the hill. I was in back.
Who else was back there?
Nobody. It was a big Packard near where I was, so I took a look at it and I was registered the stern wheel.
And then?
Well, then nothing happened, so I got tired of waiting and I went home.
Mm-hmm. You know where that Packard is now?
How should I?
It's in the sheriff's garage. It was fished out of 12 feet of water off Lido Pier early this morning. There was a dead man in it. He'd been sapped. The car was pointed toward the end of the pier and the hand throttle pulled out.
Why, you can't pin that on me.
Make an awful good try. Why, Sit down, Joe.
Joe sinks back into his chair.
You see, the dead man was Owen Taylor, Sternwood chauffeur. He went up to Geiger's place because he was sweet on Carmen. He didn't like the kind of games Geiger was playing. Got himself in the back way with a jimmy, and he had a gun. And the gun went off, as guns will, and Geiger fell down dead. Owen ran away, taking the film with him. You went after him and got it. How else would you get it?
All right, you're right. I heard the shots and saw him run down the back steps and into the pack and away.
Yeah.
I followed him. He turned west on Sunset, and beyond Beverly, he skidded off the road and came to a stop. So I came up and played copper. He had a gun. He was rattled, so I sapped him down. I figured the film might be worth something, so I took it. That's the last I saw of him.
Uh-huh. So you left an unconscious man in a car way out near Beverly someplace, and you want me to believe that somebody conveniently came along, ran that car all the way down to the ocean, pushed it off the pier, and then came back and hit Geiger's body.
Well, I didn't.
Somebody did. You wanted time to take over.
You can't prove I did it.
I don't particularly want to. All I want to do is find out what Geiger had on the Sternwoods.
Well, maybe you and I can make a little deal.
Go ahead.
Rising, Brody checks his pocket, then reaches for a gun on the table.
Huh? Maybe she's back. If she is, she hasn't got her gun.
Marlowe shows a bulge in his pocket. Brody opens the door a crack. Brody collapses. Marlowe dashes into the hall as a man races downstairs. It's Carroll, Geiger's henchman. One flight behind, Marlowe chases him down into the lobby. Carroll flees across the street, then turns, gun raised. Marlowe ducks behind a wall. As Carroll sprints off, Marlowe runs to his coupe. Losing sight of the wiry henchman, Marlowe gets into his car and speeds off, driving over the curb as he takes a corner. As Marlowe cruises the streets, he sees Carroll striding briskly down the sidewalk. Streetlight glints on his black leather jacket. Slowly passing him, Marlowe finds a parking spot on the street and pulls over. He slides into the passenger seat with the brim of his fedora turned down and worn low over his eyes. He glances back, then ducks down as Carroll approaches from behind. Marlowe gets out with a pistol.
You got a match, bud?
Carroll freezes.
Now, what'll it be, kid? Me or the cops?
What do you want?
Marlowe pats him down and finds a gun in his pocket.
Sit in that car, back of the wheel. You drive.
Carroll climbs into the driver's seat, and Marlowe gets in beside him.
As soon as this police car goes by, we're going to Geiger's house. Oh, and by the way, Carol, you shot the wrong guy. Brody didn't kill Geiger. All right, let's go.
Carol starts the car and drives. Later, they pull into Geiger's driveway. Marlowe keeps his pistol aimed at Carol as they get out. The wiry henchman, his dark curly hair slicked back, leads the way to the front door and stops.
You got a key? Let's go in.
Who said I got a key?
All right, come on. Maybe you need this.
He throws down his gun. As Carroll reaches for it, Marlowe kicks him in the jaw, knocking him out. Marlowe takes back his gun, then unlocks the front door and drags Carroll inside. Later, in the dark living room, Carroll lies unconscious on the floor as Marlowe ties his hands behind his back with a tasseled drapery cord. Rising, the lean private detective takes a handkerchief from his suit coat and gently dabs the corner of his mouth. His eyes focus across the dark room. Pocketing the handkerchief, he strides through the beaded curtain into a bedroom. Two tall black candles burn on either side of the bed where Geiger's body lies. Two strips of tapestry make a cross on his chest. Marlowe tugs an ear, then cracks a faint grin and wets his lips. Heading back into the living room, he turns on a lamp, then picks up the phone and dials.
Hello. Hello, Bernie.
Yeah. Is this where you think it is?
Yeah, it's Marlowe. How you fix for red points?
I haven't got any.
Well, who has? Reason I asked was I got some cold meat set out. Might interest you. You boys find a gun on Owen Taylor when they fished him out of the drink last night?
That'd come under the heading of police business.
Yeah, I know it'd come under the heading of police business, but if they did, it had three empty shells in it.
Howdy-ho.
You come up to 7244 Laverne Terrace off Laurel Canyon Road, and I'll show you where the slugs went.
Right,
I'll be waiting for you.
Later.
What did you hide Geiger's body for? You admit shooting Brody, do you?
Take it, chump.
He doesn't have to admit it. Here's his gun.
Come on.
Bernie tugs Carol to his feet and ushers him out. Now Vivian Rutledge walks into a smoke-filled restaurant wearing a shimmering LeMay jacket over a black dress. Carrying a fur coat on her arm, she finds Marlowe at the bar, dressed in a rakish pinstriped suit. He takes a long sip of his drink.
Hello.
Well.
I'm late. I'm sorry.
How are you today?
Better than last night.
I can agree on that.
Well, hello, Max.
Good afternoon, Mrs. Rutledge.
Got a table for us?
Certainly, madam. This way, please.
Marlowe holds a half-smoked cigarette.
I'll have a scotch, miss.
Yes, sir.
A scotch and plain water.
Yes, sir.
They sit, and she takes off a glove.
Well, how'd you happen to pick out this place?
Maybe I wanted to hold your hand.
Oh, that can be arranged.
She hands him her glove.
What do you want to see me about?
Well, one thing, my father was very pleased when he saw the morning papers. So was I.
Yes, we were lucky. I managed to keep the Sternwoods out of it.
He hopes you didn't involve yourself too deeply.
You tell him it was no fault of yours?
No. He asked me to give you a check.
I don't need any money yet.
He considers the case closed.
Oh?
It is, isn't it?
Well, as far as Geiger's concerned, yes.
Then it's completely closed. I hope this is satisfactory.
500? Well, that's a lot more than I expected, but welcome just the same.
We're very grateful to you, Mr. Marlowe, and I'm very glad it's all over.
They sip their drinks.
Tell me, what do you usually do when you're not working?
Play the horses, fool around.
No women?
Well, I'm generally working on something most of the time.
Could that be stretched to include me?
Well, I like you. I told you that before.
I liked hearing you say it.
Hmm.
But you didn't do much about it.
Well, neither did you.
Well, speaking of horses, I like to play them myself. But I like to see them work out a little first. See if they're front runners or come from behind. Find out what their whole card is. What makes them run.
Find out mine?
I think so.
Go ahead.
I'd say you don't like to be rated. You like to get out in front. Open up a lead, take a little breather in the back stretch, and then come home free.
You don't like to be rated yourself.
He lights her cigarette.
I haven't met anyone yet that can do it. Any suggestions?
Well, I can't tell till I've seen you over a distance of ground. Got a touch of class, but I don't know how far you can go.
A lot depends on who's in the saddle. Go ahead, Marlowe. I like the way you work. In case you don't know it, you're doing all right.
There's one thing I can't figure out.
What makes me run?
Uh-huh.
I'll give you a little hint. Sugar won't work. It's been tried.
What'd you try it on me for? Who told you to sugar me off this case? Was it Eddie Mars?
Her gaze hardens.
All right. Don't answer me. But somebody put you up to it, and it wasn't your father. He didn't tell you to pay me off, did he?
No, he's not well. I used my own judgment.
Are you sure?
Of course I know it hasn't worked so well up till now.
What's Eddie Mars got to do with this case?
Nothing. He runs a gambling house. I play horses, I play the wheel.
Playing something else, too.
What makes you think...
Never mind talking. Let me do it. Did you know it was Eddie Mars' blonde wife, Sean Regan, was supposed to run off with?
Who doesn't?
Did you know he owned the house Geiger operated in, that he was mixed up in that racket, too?
No, I don't believe
it. Then why does it bother you so much? What's Eddie Marsh got on you?
She stubs out her smoke.
Well, come now, Angel. Stop shaking. I don't want to hurt you. I'm trying to help you. Well,
you better run along. You made a deal and you're going to stick to it, right or wrong. We'll take up the question of you and I when the race is over. The only trouble is we could have...
Pardon me.
Yes. The only trouble is we could have had a lot of fun if you weren't a detective.
We still can.
So long.
She brushes past him, and he watches her go, gently tugging on his ear.
Oh, waiter.
Sir?
Have you got a phone around here?
Yes, sir. Right over there.
Thanks.
You're welcome.
Marlowe goes to the payphone and leans against the wall.
$5.65, sir.
How much is that?
$0.55.
Thank you. Hello, may I speak with Mr. Marsh, please?
This is Marsh talking.
Oh, hello, Eddie. I didn't recognize your voice. This is Marlowe. Called you up because I want to see you.
Sure. When?
Well, I'd like to drive up this evening.
Okay, come ahead.
Later, Marlowe walks from the parking lot of a sprawling stone building to the front door. A tuxedo doorman lets him in.
Good evening.
Good evening.
Marlowe saunters over to a cocktail waitress in a short sleeveless dress.
Mr. Marsh around. My name's Marlowe. He's expecting me.
Just wait here and I'll find out.
Sinking a hand into his pants pocket, he studies the crowd in a smoky bar.
He was spending on the ponies. He was spending on the girls.
Marlowe moves on to a lounge where men and women sit around Vivian Rutledge. Tall and slim, she stands by a piano.
But when his wife said, sweetie, what did you get for me? He socked her in the choppers. Such a sweet, sweet guy was he.
And her tears flowed like wine.
She sees Marlowe, and they exchange a two-fingered wave.
She's a real sad tomato.
She's a busted valentine.
Knows her
mama done told her
that a man is darned unkind.
Vivian frowns as the cocktail waitress whispers to Marlowe. Noticing, he studies the waitress's shapely figure and cocks his brow. Vivian smiles over.
Like a willow. My, oh my, how that baby could cry.
Vivian sips a drink.
Like wine.
Yes, sir, tis.
Marlowe leaves like and runs into Eddie's two henchmen. He raises his hands.
Oh, hello, boy.
Oh, stop it. He's waiting to see you.
At a closed door, the shapely waitress presses a buzzer, then waves Marlowe inside.
Thanks.
Entering, he closes the door behind him.
Oh, hello, Eddie.
Hello, Marlowe. Glad you came. Never been here before, have you?
Well, it's the first time. I wouldn't be here now if you hadn't told me over the phone I could come up here if I needed help.
Sure. Drink?
Yeah.
Eddie gets two shot glasses from a cabinet.
I like the way you've handled this whole thing. Made me sore at first, but I see now you know what you were doing. You and I could get along. I like to pay my bills as I go. How much do I owe you?
For what?
Still careful, huh?
All right, then. I want some information about Sean Regan.
Eddie flinches, then hardens in a tight-lipped gaze.
I heard you got that already from the Bureau of Missing Persons.
You get around, huh?
My boys do.
Where is he?
I haven't any idea.
You didn't bump him off, did you?
No. You think I did?
That's what I came up here to ask you.
You're kidding.
All right, I'm kidding.
Marlowe takes a drink.
You didn't do it yourself, and none of your boys are good enough to do it. I used to know Regan.
I thought you told me you weren't looking for Regan.
I wasn't then. Maybe I just got curious. See, I finally got it through my thick skull that half the general's worries were that Regan might be mixed up in this blackmail business.
Well, Sternwood can turn over now and go back to sleep. It was Geiger's own racket. I did some inquiring myself today. Geiger and Brody got gunned. That washed the whole thing up. That I'm sure of.
It's finished, then.
Marlowe polishes off his drink.
General thinks like you do. He
You paid me off today.
I'm sorry to hear that. I wish he'd hire you on a straight salary to keep that daughter of his home. She's out there now.
Yeah, I know, I heard of her.
She's not very popular around here. When she loses, she doubles, and I wind up with a fistful of paper. She wins, she takes my money home with her.
You get it back next time, don't you?
No, she spends it somewhere else by then.
Oh, I see. She goes in a cuff.
Huh? Yeah.
I'll keep her out of here, then. Well, looks like I took the long trip for nothing.
Sorry, I can't help you.
You mind if I look the place over before I go back?
No, go ahead. Take that door. It comes out behind the tables.
No, thanks. I'll go out here with the rest of the suckers.
Maybe someday I can do you a real favor.
Maybe. You know, there's one thing that puzzles me. You don't seem in much of a hurry to find that wife of yours. From what I hear, she's not the kind of a wife a guy wants to lose. Could it be that you know where she is? Maybe Regan, too.
Better stop being curious, soldier. What's between me and my wife is between us.
Sorry. Oh, Eddie, you don't have anybody watching me, do you? Tailing me in a gray Plymouth coupe, maybe?
No, why should I?
I can't imagine unless you're worried about where I am all the time.
I don't like you that well.
So long, Eddie.
Marlowe steps out and glances at the lounge where Vivian was singing. Two waitresses intercept him.
Oh, Mr. Marlowe.
Yeah?
Mr. Marlowe.
Yeah?
Mrs. Rutt.
You better take it.
Well, Mrs. Rutledge asked if you would look her up before you went.
She's in at the center table.
Thank you both.
Eddie's henchmen approach.
Oh, Mr. Marlowe. Mrs. Rutledge.
Yeah, Mrs. Rutledge wants to see me.
How did you know?
He told me.
She sure is picking him tonight.
He didn't say.
Just 1-8 bets in a row.
I didn't hear him tell you anything.
He didn't.
Marlowe strides across a smoky casino to the roulette table where Vivian sits. Her long, slim-fitting dress clings to her figure.
What kind of a game is this? Go on, spin the wheel. I want another play.
I am sorry you have more than $14,000 there on the table. Cannot cover your bet.
It's your money. Don't you want it back?
I sent for Mr. Mars.
Look, lady,
you
know...
Do you want to cover it?
No.
Come on.
Hello.
Eddie steps into the room.
The lady.
Something the matter, Mrs. Rutledge?
Yes, I'd like one more play, Eddie. All this on the red.
Cover her bet in even thousands. No one objects to this turn of the wheel being for the lady alone.
Wish me luck, Molly.
You wanted to see me.
Yes, the people I came with want to stay. So I thought maybe you'd like to drive me home.
Sure.
Are you ready, lady?
Yeah, I'm ready.
So am I.
She shoots him a keen glance, then watches the croupier spin the roulette wheel. As the metal ball spins around the outer rim, the croupier mops his brow. Eddie and Marlowe exchange a quick look. The ball settles in a pocket.
Number 5, red.
Eddie smiles tightly and slips away. Marlowe smirks at Vivian.
Well, you did all right. I'll get my car while you collect. Meet you outside.
Her lips part as she draws a breath. Later, Marlowe puts on his fedora as he strides outside, wearing a topcoat over his suit. Ahead of him, rows of cars glint in the parking lot. Marlowe walks over to his coupe and hesitates, his brow furrows. Opening the driver's side door, he leans in, reaches under the dash, and pulls down a secret panel which holds two pistols. Marlowe takes one, then hides the panel and leans back out, closing the car door behind him. He checks the bullet chambers, then sinks his gun hand into the pocket of his topcoat. Across the way, he sees a wiry man leave Eddie's joint and head toward the parking lot. Marlowe ducks between cars. As the man starts between the parked rows, Marlowe creeps out of sight behind the front of a car. The man trains his gaze left and right. Marlowe straightens a bit for a better view and watches the man pass.
Good night.
Good night.
The man quickly hides behind a car as Vivian leaves Eddie's. Carrying a white purse and wearing a fur coat, she strides toward the parking lot. Marlowe stays hidden and watches her pass by. The wiry man sidles up behind her.
This is a gun, lady. I want that money. Yell and I'll cut you in half. Give me that bag.
Marlowe sneaks up, wielding his pistol.
Hello, pal. Easy.
The thief raises his hands.
Somebody's always giving me guns. You can turn around now. I don't like people who play games. Tell your boss.
Marlowe slugs him.
You wake up.
He ambles close to Vivian.
Well, I'm glad I asked you to take me home.
Well, so am I.
Shall we go now?
Uh-huh.
She follows him to his car. Marlowe pockets his gun and opens the door for her.
What are you trembling for? Don't tell me you were scared, because I won't believe that.
I'm not used to being hijacked. Give me a little time.
Hijacked? Is that what it was?
What else?
She climbs in, and he closes her door. Later, they drive along a flat desert road. Vivian slouches in her seat.
You're still shaking. What's the matter? You weren't worried about me, were you? Afraid I'd get hurt? When did you first begin to feel that way about me?
Marlowe downshifts.
Why are we stopping?
To settle something. All right. Let's begin with what Eddie Mars has on you.
If he had anything, would it be any of your business? You've already been paid, haven't you?
Yeah, by you.
Are you after more money?
I guess you got a right to ask that. No, I'm not after more money. I've already been well paid. I've got another reason.
You like my father, don't you?
Mm-hmm.
Well, why don't you stop?
Remember I told you I was beginning to like another one of the Sternwoods?
I wish you'd show it.
That should be awful easy.
Her wide-set eyes search his face, and he kisses her, slow and gentle.
I like that. I'd like more.
He presses his lips to hers again.
That's even better.
All right. Now that's settled. What's Eddie Mars got on you?
So that's the way it is.
That's the way it is. Kissing is all right. It's nice. I'd like to do more of it. First, I want to find out what Eddie Mars has on you.
If you say that again,
I'll keep on saying it till I find out. Look, Angel, I called Eddie Mars and told him I was coming up to see him. When I arrived, you were there. The two of you staged an act. He let you win a lot of money and then sent a man around to take it away from you, just to prove there was nothing between you. You're shaking again.
Take me home.
Sure, I will. First, open that bag. There's 28 grand in, I'll eat every word I've said. Come on, open it and make a sap out of me, or else stop playing me for one.
Take me home.
All right. I'm afraid that's as far as I'm going to carry you. Now on, you can take care of yourself.
He drives on. Later, he unlocks the door to his apartment and goes in, taking off his fedora as he steps across the living room. Sitting in an armchair is Carmen.
Well.
He whips around.
What does the hat check girl get for a tip?
I'm trying to think of something appropriate. How'd you get in here?
Bet you can't guess.
How about I can? You came in through the keyhole like Peter Pan.
Who's he?
The guy I used to know around a pool room.
You're cute.
I'm getting cuter every minute. How did you get in?
I showed the manager your card. I stole it from Vivian. I told him you said to come up here and wait for you.
She stops biting her thumb.
See, I remembered.
What do you remember about Sean Regan?
I didn't like him.
Yeah, why?
He didn't pay any more attention to me than you do. Treated me like a baby all the time.
How does Eddie Mars treat you?
I don't know him.
You sure?
Mm.
You know who he is, don't you?
He's always calling Vivian up. Why? Is he cute?
No, I think you're telling the truth for a change.
Is he as cute as you are?
Nobody is. All right, kid, I've had a long day. You better be going.
Mm-mm.
Come on, Carmen.
I don't
Come
want...
on.
I...
He grabs her hand and she bites him. Marlowe yanks her to her feet.
You kid!
Shut up.
He shoves her out into the hall and closes the door. Later. In bed, Marlowe answers the phone.
Yeah?
Hello, Phil?
Oh, hello, Bernie. What's up? I just woke up. I haven't had breakfast. 2 o'clock. I'd rather buy my own. I know that food the county puts out. All right, I'll be there.
Marlowe climbs out of bed. Later, he visits Bernie's office. Venetian blinds cast slanting shadows on the wood-paneled walls.
Don't you know any better than to wake a man up at 2 o'clock in the afternoon? What's up?
I got some orders for you. You'll lay off the Sternwood case.
Huh? Who says so?
The DA.
The DA, huh? Must have changed his mind. Who changed it for him?
General Sternwood.
Personally?
Oh, all right. Between you and me, he didn't talk to the general. He talked to the daughter, Mrs. Rutledge.
Oh. Any reason given?
Not that I know of.
Well, there's no law that says a man can't work in a case without a client. You know, just to keep his hand in.
Now, look, Phil, I'm just supposed to tell you to lay off.
I know. You just work here. Bernie, put yourself in my shoes for a minute. A nice old guy has two daughters. One of them is, well, wonderful, and the other one is not so wonderful. As a result, somebody gets something on her. The father hires me to pay off. Before I can get to the guy, the family chauffeur kills him. But that doesn't stop things. That just starts them. And two murders later, I find out somebody's got something on Wonderful.
Who's somebody?
I think it's Eddie Mars.
Why?
For one thing, he owns the house Geiger was killed in.
He did. The day after the murder, he transfers the deed to a dummy. What have you got that hooks Mars up with Mrs. Rutledge?
Well, last night, the two of them... Well, I don't want to bore you with the whole story. But they went to the moon to prove to me there was nothing between them. But I think there is, and I think it's got something to do with Sean Regan.
Who's missing and supposed to run off with Eddie Moore's wife.
Uh-huh.
What does the general think about all this?
I don't know. Wonderful won't let me get to him. You still want me to lay off?
Well, the DA does, but you generally do all right following your own hunches.
Thanks, Bernie. Well, I'm going out and get some breakfast. You want a cup of coffee?
Mm-mm. I can't afford to be seen with you.
Marlowe grins.
Well, so long, Bernie.
Later, at a restaurant counter, Marlowe fiddles with some coins, then tugs on his ear. A waitress turns on a light. Marlowe picks up a coin and goes to a payphone.
Norris, I'd like to come out and see General Sternwood.
I don't think it would be possible, sir, tonight.
Yeah, why not?
Well, I've been trying to call you, Mr. Marlowe. Mrs. Rutledge is very anxious to talk to you. If you'll wait just a minute, I'll put her on.
Uh-huh.
Marlowe sets down the earpiece.
Hey, Sugar, you got a match?
Sure thing.
The waitress lights his cigarette.
Hello, Marlowe. Hello.
Thanks.
Hello.
No, hello, Mrs. Rutledge.
Hello, Marlowe. I wanted to tell you you can stop worrying and call off your bloodhounds. We found Sean.
What's that? You found Sean?
Yes, he's been in Mexico. He hasn't been very well.
Yeah, what happened?
Oh, an accident of some kind. We didn't get all the details. I'm leaving at once to meet him.
Oh, I see. I suppose the general's quite pleased.
We haven't told him yet. We thought it best to wait.
Well, thanks for telling me. Have a nice trip.
I will. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Hanging up, he blinks thoughtfully and drags on his cigarette. Later, on a dark, foggy street, Marlowe pauses by a Plymouth coupe. Opening the passenger door, he flips on a light and looks at the registration card. The owner is Harry Jones, 240 Dunlea Street, Los Angeles, California. Marlowe turns off the light and gets out. Continuing on down the sidewalk, he passes a man lurking in an alley.
Say, mister, would you please...
Another man slugs Marlowe. The two goons drag him into the alley. One holds Marlowe while the other punches him. They take turns hitting, and Marlowe collapses.
This is just our way of staying laid off.
He kicks Marlowe in the gut, then strolls off with his buddy. As Marlowe lifts his head off the ground, another man appears in the misty shadows. He glances after the goons, then warily steps over to Marlowe. Helping him to his feet, the stranger sits Marlowe on a trash can. With heavy-lidded eyes, Marlowe rubs the back of his head and looks the fellow over.
You the guy that's been tailing me?
Yeah. My name's Jones, Harry Jones. I want to see you.
Swell. You want to see those guys jump me?
I didn't care one way or the other.
You gotta yell for help.
The guy's playing a hand. I let him play it. I'm no kibitzer.
You got brains. Get my hat, will you?
Harry hands him his fedora.
Help me up to my office.
Supporting Marlowe around the waist, Harry walks him out of the alley. Later, at a sink in his office, Marlowe washes his face. Harry stands nearby. His lips twitch as he watches Marlowe wince in pain.
That working over they gave you was about the best I've ever seen, and I've been around, too.
Yeah.
Used to run a little liquor. Rode the scout car with a Tommy gun in my lap. Tough racket.
Terrible. Sit down, you make me nervous.
Maybe you don't believe me.
What do you want?
That's better. I've got something to sell, cheap, for a couple of C's.
Don't let me stop you.
Don't you even want to know who I am?
I already know. You're not a cop. You don't belong to Eddie Moore because I asked him. So you must be one of Brody's friends. So Agnes is loose again, huh?
How'd you know that? She's a nice girl. We're talking about getting married.
She's too big for you.
That's a dirty crack, brother.
Yeah, I suppose you're right.
Marlowe sinks into a chair.
Maybe I've been running around with the wrong people. Let's cut the babble. What do you want?
You're looking for something. Will you pay for it?
If it does what?
Helps you find Regan.
It's getting funny. I'm supposed to pay you 2 C's for telling me I'm looking for Regan. People have been telling me that for days. I don't even pass out cigars anymore.
Do you want to know what I've got, or don't you?
I don't know. 200 buys a lot of information in my circle.
Would you pay it to know where Eddie Marr's wife is? Would you pay 200 bucks for that, Shamus?
I think I might. Where?
Agnes found her. She'll tell you when she has the dough in her hand.
You might tell the cops for nothing.
I ain't so brittle.
Agnes must have something I didn't notice.
I ain't tried to pull anything. I came here with a straight proposition, take it or leave it. One right guy to another. You start waving cops at me. You ought to be ashamed of yourself.
I am. Okay, 200 it is.
Have you got the money?
Where's Agnes?
You know Puss Walgreen's office? Fulwider building? 428 in the back?
Oh, but I can find it.
Will you be in shape to meet me there in an hour?
Yeah, I guess so.
You bring the dough, and I'll take you to Agnes.
Okay.
Okay.
Harry walks out. His shadow passes Marlowe as he leaves. Marlowe pushes himself out of the chair. With his dark hair smoothly pushed back, he hikes up his pants and stretches his shoulders. Later, outside a building with tall glass doors, Marlowe gets out of his car. He strides inside, past an elevator man asleep with a newspaper on his lap. Marlowe takes the stairs. Upstairs, he feels his back and winces, then steps softly toward an office with frosted glass windows. Lettering on a door reads, L.D. Walgreen, Insurance. Marlowe leans close.
Who are you? What do you want?
Peering under his fedora, Marlowe strides down the hall to another door marked Entrance. Glancing over his shoulder, he carefully turns the doorknob and slips inside. Behind a desk, the shadows of Harry and another man darken frosted windows.
I want to know why you've been following that detective, Marlowe.
Who says I've been?
I do. That was a mistake, your mistake. Eddie Mars don't like it.
I'll see what...
Sit down and quit stalling. Why are you tailing Marlowe?
All right, there's no harm telling. It was for Joe Brody's girl. She's got to get out of town. That takes dough. She figured she could get it through Marlowe.
Why would he pay?
You know about the night the kid bumped Brody. Well, the young Sternwood girl was there. Only Marlowe didn't tell the cops that. So Agnes figured it was railroad fare so she could get hold of him. You get it?
Sure, I get it. Where's this Agnes?
What do you care? What do you want with
Eddie's
her?
Henchman pulls a gun.
What's the matter, Jones? Ain't you ever seen a gun before? Where's the girl?
Listen.
You want me to count three or something like a movie? Where's Agnes?
All right. You win. She's in an apartment. At 28 Court Street. Apartment 301. I guess I'm yellow, all right.
You just got good sense. I ain't gonna hurt her. Not if everything's like you say. You're nervous, ain't you? Maybe you need a drink.
Never mind.
I think you need one.
I don't think so,
really. You got a glass?
Yeah. There at the water cooler.
Marlowe ducks behind a filing cabinet. Through a frosted window, he watches the henchman get Harry's glass, then pour him a drink from a bottle. Marlowe stands to see through the open door as the henchman hands Harry the glass.
There you are, pal. Drink her down.
Harry stares at the glass.
Well, drink it. What do you think it is, poison? I'll bet that Agnes of yours wouldn't turn it down.
No, I'll bet she wouldn't.
Harry downs the drink, then grimaces.
What's funny?
Nothing's funny.
So long, Johnsy.
The henchman leaves. Marlowe hurries to the door and looks after him. Harry drops his glass, then buckles over and collapses on the floor. Marlowe crouches down beside Harry's still body and sniffs a piece of broken glass. His dark eyes flick to the phone. With an intent gaze, he picks up the receiver and dials.
Information. Give me the telephone number of apartment 301 28 Court Street.
Thank you. One moment, please.
Officers, Police Identification Bureau. Wallace speaking. You got a girl living there named Agnes Lozier?
Nobody by that name.
Well, you got a brunette with green eyes, kind of slanted? Either alone or with a little guy. Weighs about 115 pounds. Wears a gray hat and gray suit.
Sorry, nothing like that.
Oh. Somebody just gave out the wrong address. Thanks.
Marlowe hangs up. Staring down at Harry's body, he goes over to the couch and sits down. His brow pinches as he adjusts the tilt of his fedora and rubs his hands together. Picking up a piece of glass, he fingers it.
You did all right, Jonesy. But you left me high and dry.
Marlowe puts down the glass and goes to the phone.
Yeah?
Who is this?
What'd you say?
I said, who is this?
Oh, hello, Agnes. This is Marlowe.
What?
Marlowe, the man you want to see.
Oh, is Harry there?
Yeah. Yeah, he's here.
Come on, will you?
I can't talk to you.
Why?
Because he's dead. A little man died to keep you out of trouble. And I got your money for you. Do you want it?
Yeah, I want it.
Well, have you got a car? No. Where can I meet you?
I'll
be there in half an hour.
With his thumbs hooked on the waist of his pants, Marlowe looks down at Harry, then heads out. Later, Marlowe gets into the passenger side of Agnes's car. She studies him as he reaches into an inside pocket and pulls out some cash.
What happened to Harry?
There's no use going into that. You don't really care anyway. Just put it down. Your little man deserves something better. Here you are. Here's your 200.
She puts it in her purse.
Well, Joe and I were out riding on Foothill Boulevard a couple of weeks ago. We passed a brown coupe and I saw the girl who was driving. She was Eddie Ma's wife. There was a fellow with her, Canino.
Yeah, I know him.
Yeah, there's some people you don't forget even if you've only seen them once. So we got curious and Joe tailed them. Do you know where Rialito is?
Uh-huh.
Well, about 10 miles east, there's a side road. Just off the highway, there's a two-bit garage and paint shop run by a guy named Art Huck. A car drop, likely, and a frame house right behind it. That's where Eddie Ma's wife is holed up.
You're sure of that?
Why should I lie?
Art Huck's 10 miles east of Rialito, is that right?
Yeah. Well, so long, copper. Wish me luck. I got a raw deal.
Yeah, your kind always does.
Later, Marlowe's coupe speeds down a deserted road. Darkness blankets the countryside. He stops, beaming his headlights on a sign. Rialito, 7 miles. Taking off again, he shifts into a higher gear and sits back. His dark eyes flicker on the road ahead. Later, Marlowe comes to a stop on a hilltop. Opening his door, he stands on the running board and looks up ahead. His headlights shine on a rundown garage. Art Huck, auto repairs and painting. Marlowe gets back in. Accelerating, he careens off the road. The car stops in a ditch, and Marlowe gets out. Going around to the other side of the car, he crouches down by the tire. The car sinks with the deflating tire. Standing and wiping grime off his hands, Marlowe strides toward the rundown garage. Next door, the curtained windows of a ranch-style house glow softly. Marlowe passes a gas pump in the garage drive, then pauses outside a set of large plank doors where light from inside shines through gaps in the wood. Continuing on, Marlowe finds a sleek car parked out back. He returns to the garage doors and peeks through a crack.
What do you want?
Open up. I got a flat back here on the highway.
Sorry, mister. We're closed for the night. Better try Rialito.
Marlowe kicks the door. The door opens, and a stern-featured man stands there with a gun.
All right. Come on in.
Marlowe steps inside.
You scare off a lot of trade with that. You can get yourself hurt kicking on doors.
Cut it out, Art. The guy's right. You run a garage, don't you? Go ahead, give him a hand.
It's Harry's killer.
Thanks, mister. I suppose you can fix flats. Good as you can make them, bud, but right now I'm busy working on a spray job.
It's too damp for a good spray job, Art. You got time to fix his tire.
Yeah, but I don't...
Get moving.
Sure. Here's the key to the back. Put the spare on. That'll make it easier.
Art holsters his pistol, and Marlowe steps over to the killer.
Yeah, I took a skid up at the corner. Front tire went. Lucky to find some help.
Yeah. You live around here?
Oh, just drove in from Reno and Carson City.
Came a long way around, eh? Business trip?
Partly. Have any car painted?
Just a spray job. Art's pretty slow. He should have been.
Art grabs Marlowe, and the killer punches him out.
All right, Art. Take him in the house.
The killer opens his fist, and ball bearings drop out. Later, Marlowe comes to, tied up on the floor and leaning against a sofa. Opening his groggy eyes, he sees a fine-featured woman across the room. She wears black pants with a glittering blouse and her long blonde hair pinned back. Bringing him a glass of water, she holds it to his lips and he drinks.
You'd be Mrs. Eddie Mars, the blonde Regan was supposed to run off with.
That's right.
Where is Sean Regan?
I'd like to know that myself.
Vivian enters the room.
Oh, hello, Angel. I thought I'd find you here.
Yeah. But you don't seem to be running in front today.
Now move that light, will you? Or move me.
Vivian turns off a lamp. Wearing a black knit dress, belted at her slim waist, she sits beside him.
I suppose we're in the house back of the garage.
That's right.
Boys don't take any chances, do they? Where are they? Out digging a grave?
You had to go on with this, didn't you?
Where are they?
They've gone down the road to telephone.
They call up Eddie Mars, huh, to find out what to do with me. Well, I could have told them that.
Why did you have to go on?
Too many people told me to stop. Light me a cigarette, will you, Angel?
Why did you have to make trouble? Eddie never did you any harm. Besides, I was never in love with Sean. We were just good friends. If I hadn't hidden out here when Sean disappeared, the police would have been certain he killed him.
Maybe he did kill him.
Eddie's not that kind.
You mean Eddie Mars never kills anybody?
No.
You really believe that, don't you?
Yes, I do.
Vivian holds his cigarette.
How do you suppose I found out you were here?
I don't know. How did you?
A little man named Harry Jones told me. A funny little guy. Harmless. I liked him. Came to sell me the information because he found out I was working for General Sternwood. How he found out, it's a long story. Anyway, Canino, your husband's hired man, got to him first while I stood around like a sap. I was the next room. Now, that little man is dead. But Eddie Mars didn't do that.
You're lying.
Oh, no, Eddie Mars never kills anybody. He just hires it done.
I don't believe
you. You think he's just a gambler, don't you? Well, I think he's a blackmailer, a hot car broker, a killer by remote control. He's anything that looks good to him, anything with money pinned to it, anything rotten.
She throws water at him.
Ask him when you see him.
She hurries upstairs.
Well, I get rid of her. She's okay. I like her.
You like too many people.
Well, never mind, Angel. The water feels good.
I wonder if you'd do what she did for a man.
I was wondering that myself.
There's nothing to do but wait for Canino to come back. He doesn't know I was in the other room. You know what he'll do when he finds out, don't you? He'll beat my teeth out and then kick me in the stomach for mumbling. Oh, that'll be just a start. It won't be pretty to watch.
Please don't talk like that.
You should have gone to Mexico.
Stop, please.
Then you couldn't have gone, could you? The Border Patrol would have checked you through alone. Too many people would have seen you without Regan. It was much safer to come here with her. Much safer, especially for Eddie Mars.
Will you get out of this and stay out if I let you go?
No. Take this thing out of my mouth, will you?
She pulls the cigarette from his lips, then drapes an arm around his neck and kisses him. As she pulls away, Marlowe cracks a smile.
Oh, that's better. Get a knife and cut these ropes.
Vivian heads off into another room. With his arms tied to his feet, Marlowe manages to sit up on the sofa. Vivian returns with a knife and cuts the rope around his chest.
Watch your fingers.
After freeing his arms, she kneels and saws the rope around his ankles.
Don't cut towards your hand.
Marlowe slides his cuffed hands under his feet.
Who's got a key to these handcuffs?
Canino.
I don't suppose there's a gun around here.
None that I know of.
Marlowe gets up and goes to the window. Through the sheer lace curtain, he peers into the darkness.
Well, boys made a fast trip.
What can you do?
Headlights shine on the window.
Look, Angel, I'm going to leave you in a tough spot.
That's all right with me.
Now, how do I get out of here?
That door leads onto a side porch.
All right, as soon as I've gone, you count to 20 slowly and then scream your head off.
I will.
All right, start counting.
Out on the porch, still handcuffed, Marlowe ducks behind a corner and watches a car in the driveway extinguish its headlights. Canino gets out of the driver's side. Canino and Art dash inside, and Marlowe sprints for his own car. From the secret spot under the dashboard, he grabs a pistol, then crouches behind the car and watches the house. Inside, lights go out. Art stands at the front door with a gun. Scanning the darkness, he creeps forward. Marlowe smiles and aims his gun away from the mechanic. Art leaps over a railing and flees into the night. Marlowe stays hidden behind his car and watches the house again. Inside, Canino opens a window and sticks out a pistol. Marlowe ducks. Canino turns back inside and shoves Vivian toward the door. Hiding behind her tall figure, he steps outside. Marlowe crouches lower behind his coupe. Vivian walks in his direction, wringing her hands as she scans the dark. Canino uses her as a shield, his gun at the ready. Marlowe sneaks forward to the fender, waiting as they approach. Marlowe shifts as Vivian keeps a steady pace. Canino's keen eyes flit back and forth. Vivian slows down, then suddenly points away from Marlowe at his windshield.
There behind the wheel.
Over here, Canino.
Shot in the chest, Canino staggers back, then keels over, face down. Marlowe hurriedly checks the dead man's pockets. Finding something, he gives it to Vivian.
Like the key.
She unlocks his handcuffs. A dark bruise marks his chin.
I'll have to take his car.
Touching her elbow, he leads her off. Later, they drive in the rain. Fog whirls over their car. Beside Marlowe, Vivian slouches, her eyes fixed on him.
How far is it back there to the nearest telephone?
About 8 or 10 miles to Rialito. Why?
Eddie Mars' wife gets my car fixed and he finds out what happened. Plenty of trouble. You'll be in it just as much as I will.
I don't mind as long as you're around.
I didn't have a chance to thank you for what you did back there. You look good. Awful good. I didn't know they made them like that anymore.
I guess I'm in love with you.
He glances over, missing her gaze.
You go to the police with me?
I can't.
Why not?
What if I told you I killed Sean Regan?
Will you tell the police that?
I will if you take me there.
I'm not going to. Look, Angel, I'm tired. My jaw hurts and my ribs ache. I killed a man back there, and I had to stand by while a harmless little guy was killed. Do you think I can tell them all that happened because Geiger tried to throw a loop over Carmen? If I tell them that, they'll swarm over your house so fast that every closet you and your family been in for the last 6 years will look like a police convention.
He swerves.
They'll all ask the same question. Where's Sean Regan? Why did Eddie Morris hide his wife out to make it look like she ran off with Regan? Why did you hide out there? You're playing with dynamite.
I can tell you what
I'll ask any more questions. I'm not even going to ask you how you got into this mess. I'll ask Eddie Morris if I can get there quick enough.
Why are you doing that?
I guess I'm in love with you.
He keeps his eyes on the road, and she squeezes his arm. Later, they stop in front of Geiger's house. Getting out, Marlowe and Vivian cut across the lawn to the front door. Marlowe takes a key from his pocket and unlocks the door. Vivian follows him inside, where a sculpture casts a monstrous shadow on the wall. Near the Buddha statue, Marlowe turns on a lamp, then picks up the phone. Vivian reaches for the receiver, but Marlowe raises a hand, stopping her.
Hello, let me talk to Mr. Mars. Oh, hello, Eddie. This is Marlowe. Yeah, Marlowe, or what's left of him. That Canino's a pretty good boy. He'll have trouble getting another as good. What's the matter, Eddie? Can't you talk? I'm in Rio Lido. Maybe the same place Canino called from, only now it's me that's calling. I want to see you. Why don't you go to the police? I just killed your best boy. Now, do you want to see me or don't you? All right. Where? Oh, Las Lindas, too far. Not your apartment, either. Your house? You mean the one that Geiger lived in? All right. When? How long will it take me to get there? I'll be there just as quick as I can. That worked.
You're taking an awful chance.
He'll be here in 10 minutes. Go through there and make sure that back door is locked, and then close all these curtains. I'll get rid of the car.
Later, near a window, Marlowe sits on the arm of Vivian's chair and peeks outside. As he loads his gun, he drops a bullet. Vivian studies him.
You're the one who's shaking now.
I'm scared, Angel. I'm sore, too. Morris has been ahead of me all the way, way ahead. I'll get the jump on him this time. We're cooked.
He slips the gun into his suit coat pocket, then picks up another. Parting the curtain, he looks out. Headlights glow on his tense features as a long sedan turns into the driveway.
Watch the back. You see anybody coming, yell like you did before.
He kisses Vivian's forehead. Then she gets up and leaves him. Outside, Eddie directs two men around back. Two more stick with him. Inside, Marlowe glances back at the beaded curtain.
Angel!
What is it?
Curtain, stop it swinging.
He looks back outside, where Eddie directs his stocky henchmen around the other side of the house. As Eddie starts alone down the front walk, Marlowe backs away from the window. Carrying a pistol, he passes by the front door and hides behind a nearby curtain. Pale light glows on his face as he watches the entryway. Eddie comes in and pockets his key. Wearing a fedora and a tailored suit, Eddie strides over to the lamp by the phone. He turns it on, then checks his watch. Behind him, Marlowe comes out of hiding. Unaware, Eddie smirks, then picks up a pair of scissors and goes to cut the phone wire. Marlowe sneaks up behind him.
I got here first, Eddie. Put those scissors down. Put them down.
Eddie does, then slowly raises his hands.
Turn around.
Marlowe keeps his gun on Eddie and pats him down, checking his suit pockets and chest.
Over there.
Under Marlowe's steely gaze, Eddie lowers his hands and paces toward the sofa.
Sit down.
Vivian looks in.
Phil, there's two men out in back behind some trees.
Watch him.
Hello, Mr. Mars.
I told you to sit down.
Eddie glances down at Marlowe's gun, then sits.
Leave her out of it. She's all right, Eddie. She made a deal with you, and she kept it. She didn't tell me a thing except that she killed Regan, but I didn't believe that. Regan's dead, all right, but she didn't do it. It was Carmen, wasn't it? How'd it happen, Eddie?
You mean she didn't...
I asked you how it happened.
Well, Carmen liked Regan, but...
Yeah, but he liked your wife. He said no to Carmen. She gets mad when anybody says that. I've seen her that way. Go on.
She was pretty high. By the time it was over, she couldn't remember much about it.
Yeah, I've seen her that way, too. Then you hid the body.
You can't prove that.
It'll be just as bad for you if I prove it to myself. Then you started to blackmail Mrs. Rutledge by telling her what Carmen had done. How did you prove to her that Carmen had done it? Go ahead, prove it to me.
You've seen Carmen when she's that way.
Sure I have. Have you?
Well, how do you suppose...
And why didn't you know her when you walked in here that day? Tell me that. You're pretty smart, Eddie, but I've been waiting for this one.
What are you going to do about it?
I told you you were smart. You walked in here without a gun. You were going to sit there and agree to everything just like you're doing now. When I went out that door, things were going to be different. That's what those boys are doing out there. But everything's changed now, Eddie, because I got here first. All right, Angel, get down on the floor.
Don't get excited, Marlowe. If anything happens in here, if there's any shooting, you'll just...
Marlowe shoots the statue.
Now what are you boys going to think? What'll they do to the first one that goes out that door? Who's it going to be, Eddie, you or me?
Now look, Marlowe.
You look at this. What's the matter? Haven't you ever seen a gun before? What do you want me to do, count three like they do in the movies? That's what Canino said to little Jonesy.
Now don't go crazy.
And Jonesy took it better than your take. That's one, Eddie.
Eddie clutches his arm.
Don't!
Two, Eddie.
He runs outside.
Don't shoot, it's me, Marlowe!
Bullet holes pepper the door. It swings open as Eddie leans back against it. He falls, dead. Marlowe goes over to the open door, avoiding the line of fire. Fog shrouds the yard outside. With his foot, he kicks the door shut. Eddie lies at his feet. Marlowe glances from the body to the bullet holes, then across the room. Hurrying past the shattered statue, he goes to the phone. Vivian meets him there, her smooth face tense. She looks down at Eddie, then watches Marlowe's quick breaths into the receiver.
Yeah?
Bernie, this is Marlowe. I got some more red points for you.
Who is it this time?
Eddie Mars. His boy's got him. There's more to it than that. He killed Regan. I'll tell you about it when I see you.
Where are you?
The same place, Laverne Terrace. You better come up and get me out of here. And watch yourself. They may still be outside.
Right away.
Marlowe hangs up and steps close to Vivian.
It won't take them long.
What are you going to...
Wait a minute. Let me do the talking, Angel. I don't know yet what I'm going to tell them, but it'll be pretty close to the truth. But you'll have to send Carmen away from a lot of things. They have places for that. Maybe they can cure her. It's been done before. We'll have to tell your father about Regan. I think he can take it.
You've forgotten one thing. Me.
Grasping her arm, he pulls her closer.
What's wrong with you?
Nothing you can't fix.
They look away, then back into each other's eyes. Fade to black. Words appear above two cigarettes in an ashtray. The end. A Warner Brothers First National Picture.